that be from the catalog, Montgomery Ward or Sears or?
Chicago Flexible Shaft.
Chicago Flexible Shaft. Did you ever buy anything through the catalog?
No.
I thought Sears Roebuck sold everything to farmers then. Cars and...
Oh, we used to get a little... Wife used to get a little stuff once in a while through a catalog, but not amount to anything.
When did they start delivering mail out here in the country on the Star routes?
I think it is around 1905, somewhere in that neighborhood. We lived in Manning when they first started to deliver mail.
Well, you
come
could...
from Holly, and then they, I think it's around 1905.
Well, on a Star route, you could make up a package and send it with the man when he delivered your mail, couldn't you? You didn't have to take a package to the post office.
No, he'd take it. And at that time, the mailman was accommodating too. If you wanted a plow point or something, you'd tell him, he'd get it and bring it up to you when he comes with the mail.
How often did
they
he
can't
come?
Do that anymore. It's passed a law, they couldn't do that anymore.
How often did he come?
Once a day.
Once a day, same as they do now.
Yeah.
Do you remember any particular storms that you had out here?
Well,
I don't mean the blizzard we had in 77. I mean the storms before that.
I don't remember what year it was, but we had a windstorm sometime, and it took the roofs off in some of the different houses around, and it took a barn over here, I remember, and shoved it pretty near a foot off the wall, and there was a barn down on the ridge somewhere that I guess was wrecked. But I don't remember what year it was.
How about any big fires? How did you fight fires in those days?
By hand. No fire company. I went to two different fires, I remember of. And the first one burnt three big barns and the house. It started in the horse barn. Well, we had some stuff in the grain barn, load of fertilizer on a wagon ready to plant, it was in the spring of the year. We saved the stuff out of the barn pretty well. We got the horses out. It burnt the ears pretty near off in one horse, but we got it out. And then it got around into the house, and we carried everything out of the house and put it outside the road. And cleaned the whole damn business right up clean.
Oh, no fire companies, you didn't have any water.
No, we didn't have nothing to fight with. You just had to save what you could save and burn the rest of it, let it burn up.
Where was this fire? Do you remember that?
Well, it was over, but that time it was Charlie Hines Farm. It's where Maxson lives now.
Which Maxson is that? Homer Maxson?
Yeah.
Over there in Clarendon.
Yeah. Big cow farm there now.
Well, he does a good job. How could you make a real living on a small farm? You just plain didn't make a good living. That's why you sold out.
We kept alive. As I say, I worked shearing sheep and butchering hogs. And we kept on top.
Then you worked for the town on the highway department.
Yes, I worked 12 years, around that, 12 or 13 years, the town of Barrie. And the year or so before that, I worked one summer for the town of Clarendon, when I was living down in Manning then. Rented a house and lived there, and working for the day, and the road commissioner come in one morning and wanted to know if I could help him. One of his men didn't show up. So I went and worked for him that day, and the next morning he came in again. Says he, guess he ain't got sobered up yet. He says, want to work again today? And I says, yeah, I'll work again today. So I worked that day, and he says, night, he says, you want to stay on this summer and finish the job? I says, I don't want to kick nobody else out of a job. Well, he says, you come on in the morning, he says, and if he comes back, he says, I'll fire him, he says. If he's going to get drunk, he says, let him drink. I'll keep you. So I stayed and I worked that summer in Clarendon. And then after I moved up here to Barrie, I worked 12 or 14 years for John Seeger on the town of Barrie.
Now this was when?
In the 30s.
In the 30s.
Last of the 20s and the 30s, I think it was.
Well, we're getting the last of the 20s and the 30s. How about Prohibition? Can you tell me some stories about Prohibition?
Voted it down, and there was plenty of speakeasies and bootleggers passing those the same.
Oh.
And then they finally kicked that out and got license back again.
Well, the speakeasies, it's long enough now since they were around. Can you tell me where some of them were?
Well, there was different places.
Nobody will tell now.
There was one down Brockville that I remember of. And I was in that once or twice. And there was one here in East End of State Street. I was in there once. And when I was working for the town, we was way up in the southwest part of Barrie. I guess it was pretty well over into Genesee or Oakville County. I don't remember now just what house was. And the goddamn road gang pulled in there, and geez, we got some drink in there. Clarendon Hotel was running at that time, and he was a good bartender and hotel keeper. You couldn't get a drink in there, but he was on a bet. It was perfectly all right. And when he left that, in a few years afterwards, he went over into Avon. And I guess they got voted down there. And damn if he didn't run a speakeasy there before he died.
Well, speakeasies, you have to knock on the door and identify yourself and all that, or just walk in?
Only time I was ever in, when I went in with somebody else that knew the place.
That'd make it easy.
You'd just walk in and he'd speak to them, and he'd bring you up your booze and sit there on the table and have it all they wanted.
The booze would probably be all hard liquor, or was it cider?
Well, some had beer, and most of it was wine. I remember I stopped in the one down here in Brockville one time with a friend of mine. He knew the fella, and he called for what they called Dago Red wine. Went down cellar and brought up a pint milk bottle full of wine. Him and I sat there, and we put that pint into us before we got up away from there. God, Bill says, that tastes pretty good, let's have another one. So we went down and brought up another pint. We drank that up. And we got in the car and started for home. We stopped in Holly and got a few groceries and stuff we needed, and started for home. We was coming up the standpipe road in the car. He ran into a snowbank and I got out and give him a push back into the road. He says to me, he says, get under the wheel, Bill. He says, I can't even see through the windshield. So I drove the car home, put it in the barn for him, lived right neighbor to me, and I took my groceries and walked up home, went in the house, hadn't been in there long, and warm. I said to my wife, I guess I'll go out and do the chores. I went out to do the chores, and I was drunker than a damn fool. Took me 3 days to get over it.
You have
I never
wine.
Wanted any more wine.
I think I can understand. When Barry had their sesquicentennial,
I raised
you
the
had
flag,
a part in that, I think.
And I led the fire company in the parade.
That was really quite a parade. All the town of Barry was involved in that. Did you ever do much with the churches, Bill?
With what?
The churches.
I've always helped them a little. When I was a kid, we went to the Christian church in Manning. Father was superintendent of Sunday school. I attended Sunday school and even sang in the choir in the church. I ain't a church-going fella. I believe in religion, but I don't attend church as I should, I know.
Well, the
but I always figured if you lived according to the golden rule, you was pretty good shape.
Well, the churches were pretty active back then, weren't they?
Yeah. I went to Manning Church, Christian Church.
Now that
and
was
I
where...
used, after that kind of got run out. Then I went to Clarendon to the Methodist Church, some, there in Manning, when that was running. And
the church in Manning, just where was that?
Right on the southwest corner of the Four Corners. Gaylord's got it now as a storage.
That's a heck of a thing to do for a church, isn't it? Now there's a lot of great adventures there. During the Depression, you always worked because you were working out for the different farmers. Did they ever have transient workers, migrant workers then, back in those days, or what was it like?
Well, I guess some did. I don't remember. There was a lot of them got, lately they got transient help. I never happened to. Well, when I was working on the muck, I had to work with some of them, colored fellers.
Well, back in the early days, what did you do for fun?
Oh, I used to play ball. And winter times, used to go skating.
The skating around here?
Yes.
The County Historical Association. Today is January 3rd, 1980. Don Cook, Medina, New York, is interviewing Maurice Lank O'Brien of Medina, New York. Now, Lank, the first thing they want me to ask you is when and where you were born.
I was born in Medina, New York, April the 9th, 1907.
Okay, and a little year early, you graduated. You went through schools here in Medina and lived in Medina most of your life?
Yes, I was born in Medina. I went to St. Mary's Parochial School and... after the eighth grade, I immediately went to Medina High School, where I graduated in the early 1920s. At that time, I immediately obtained a job at S.A. Cook Factory in Medina, New York, as a furniture packer. I stayed there until 1930. During that time, I had the good fortune of playing baseball with the industrial team of which S.A. Cook was entered. I played left field and had the very good satisfaction of running across men like Skinny Boyle, Crab and Little Crab and Big Crab Montgomery, Eddie Cutchess, Hiker Reel, George Butts, and others. They were the best.
And you had the honor of playing in Vets Park against Babe Ruth, didn't you say?
That's right. In the 1920s, we went ahead, and I also had the fortune of playing with our great friend and collaborator, Babe Ruth, and right. He was one of the greatest. George Selkirk and Jeff Tejero, both from the Yanks, also played on that date. As I say, the place was packed, and I'll never forget the ovation that Babe Ruth got when he came to the plate the first time.
You had another good fellow by the name of Darb Whalen, didn't you?
Darb Whalen, I'm going to mention that.
Okay, go ahead.
Also, we during the 1920s, we went across a team from Lockport, and they were considered one of the best in Western New York. It was an all-Lockport team run and managed by Darb Red Whalen, who also played second base. He had men like Punks Cronenberg, Blinks O'Hearn, then there was and Ed Hare. Also, I want to mention a namesake of mine, Gob O'Brien, who caught, and Bill Smith, one of the best teams I think that ever come out of Western New York, other than naturally Medina. We played them a total of six times. We had the good fortune of defeating them five times, and we lost one. And guess who they beat? Carl Fisher, one of the greatest.
Oh.
Carl Fisher come to our team in about the 1925 or 6, and he sure was a fine pitcher. The same year that he pitched for us, I brought him to Newark, and also to Scranton, where he signed up for the Pennsylvania League. Later, he went to the big leagues himself. Also, I want to mention several of my friends, such as Louis Raymondjack and Joe Raymondjack and Eddie Cutchess Sr. We had men like Bub Tui. We had men like Honey Morgott. We had naturally George Butts played right up to the end. We had, Red Whalen come down and played with us one game. Red was, as I say, was always a friend of ours. He managed the Middleport Independents. Also brought them to Medina, where we had some wonderful games. The last time he came to Medina, he brought an international hurler with him by the name of Tommy Thompson from Toronto. And we defeated this, I'll never forget, we defeated this boy, and he was a good pitcher, 2-1.
Hmm.
Later, as we sort of broke up, we had the satisfaction of playing a little softball. Now, when I say softball, of course, that's a great sport, especially in Medina. And we were the first to play under the lights at Arnold's. Arnold's is in the town of Shelby,
sure,
which is back
in 63.
We had the satisfaction of playing against a man who was probably one of the world's best, Shifty Gears. And he was opposed
Joe Morgan.
Joe Morgan, and Joey was one of the best. We played Kodak Park in 1935 at Arnold's Field, and were defeated by this team, Kodak Park, 2-1. And later that year, they went to St. Louis and won the World's Championship. So we did not do too bad.
That was big in the 30s, under the lights. They remember the dryer down here?
Under the lights, but The main, we always packed them in at Arnold's for the simple reason it was nothing to have 1,500, 2,000 people there, and that's a lot of people for very small localities. They later went on and played under another name at the Dryer on north of Medina.
Right. State Street.
State Street.
Right. Remember that. Okay. Anything else on baseball, or do you want to go to the Armory basketball? You had a great career in there,
yeah,
too.
Oh, yeah, I had a great career.
Right.
I'd like to shift over a little, shall I call you by name?
Sure.
Cookie. Don.
All right, Don or Cookie,
I'd like to shift over to our great team in the Armory.
Right.
As I say, when I got out of school, I immediately went to Cook's and also joined Company F in the National Guard. That was 108th. At that time, we probably had one of the greatest, and I mean the greatest. We had men like Joker Clark. We had Dip Murray. We had Heather. We had the Earls. We had Ingersoll. We had Hash McNeil, Cliff Hagedorn, and we played some of the greatest and best teams in not only in Western New York, but in New York. That first year, we had the satisfaction of playing the German Orioles, who was champs of the world at that time. They come out of Buffalo, and later they had gone to St. Louis and become champs. We were defeated by 2 points.
Was a basket 2 points at that time?
And
one basket, right?
One basket. Yeah. And our total points those days was not like they are as of today, but maybe 10-8 mm-hmm. or 20-15 or something. I would like to mention there's two teams that I'll never forget. The old St. Anne's. The St. Anne's was members of a club in Buffalo, and they had some of the greatest. They played over on the south side. Most of them was considered Irish, but they did not have Irish names. I jumped against a man I'll never forget who was a Catholic priest at the present time, and his name was Legs Hohorst, one of the very best, and he could jump. They had Schorndorst, they had several well-named stars, and they, as I say, they come down with about 175 straight games in the Municipal League, and we defeated them 13-9 in the Army. The Army was packed that night, I'll never forget. Of course, we always had dancing after the games, which attracted a lot of the younger set. But the old standbys were always there, waiting. It wouldn't make a bit of difference if we were playing Shelby, they would be right there rooting for us. But we played the Adirondack All-Stars, we played the Germany Opticals, we played Harry Topol and his team out of Rochester, which would be the Rochester Centrals, one of the greatest. And then we went to New York City and played the 69th Regiment, and we defeated them 10-9. I'll never forget it. It was one of the finest games, and I'll never forget. They played both amateur rules and professional. We defeated the 69th, and professional, they beat us at our own play, which would be amateur. Now, we never got over that, but as I say, we had one of the greatest. We had one of the very best. Later, Dip Murray went to the German Orioles, and Joker Clark went to the Niagara Falls Internationals.
Do you know how many years you played? Maybe 10, like 8 or 10?
Well, I played baseball. I started naturally when I went to S.A. Cook's. I mean, that was when we had an organized team. I would say I played baseball off and on for 14 or 15 years.
Mm-hmm. Basketball, maybe about 10 or 12?
About that.
About that, yeah.
12, yeah. Maybe 15 years. No more than that. And of course, during that time, as I say, I met a lot of good boys, and of course, coming up, and I know that a lot of them did not play.
Maybe they wanted a favor, or I wanted a favor of them.
They were always there to give it to me. Men like Joe Menke,
Right.
And Everett Hart.
Mm-hmm.
And Steve Chapman and men like that, always in my corner, always waiting to, can I help you, Lank? Can I help you?
Yeah.
Those are the kind of friends that you want. Right. They never let you down.
You're into the conservation part of your life, and I'd rather wait just a minute. Now, we'll get to that in a minute, but I'd like to, you played quite a bit of semi-pro football with Pooch
That's
Palmer
right.
and some of those
That's
fellas.
Right.
We haven't touched that yet now. You might
well,
want to
I
say
started,
a little about
I started in high school, naturally, and when I got out, all Medina had one of the best. When I say not the best, but one of the best.
Right.
And we had some, like the Errols and Bill Redman, which...
Hopper Redman.
There'll never be another Hopper Redman as long as anybody lives.
Right.
He was one of the finest and as nice a guy that ever lived. And, of course, you can't let down Standish or Perry or even Lester. I'll never forget Pete Lester in the early 20s. We played the St. Agatha's out of Buffalo, and they had a very fine team. Dolly Bennett was the coach at that time. And we went ahead and we defeated this team by 1 point. And then they tried to get their money, and of course Bennett, they couldn't find Dolly. Dolly'd gone somewhere with the money, see. Not that he had taken it, it was just the idea they were still looking for their token for coming to Medina to play football, see. So we ended up getting all the proceeds just the same, see. But I would like to say this: one of the finest teams I think I ever played with. Bill Redman and I went down to Rochester and played with all Lockport. We played at Edgerton Park, and they were considered as good a team possibly. They were all coaches, and I played against a fellow I'll never forget from. He was from Niagara by the name of Sheldon Hecker. And he was my opponent and a very, very good man. Well, they defeated us 17-0, but we figured we won because men like Ghost Galloway and Alexander and Obinar, they were very good men. All of them are coaches. And they all stayed on that one team, and they played several games and then they disbanded. But we had the honor and the distinction of playing that one team. I don't know exactly whether they had a name or not, but we'll say that
good.
It was a real team.
Good. Anything else there on athletic line? Or?
Yes, I played with two teams in Lockport during my career, and that were the North Ends and all Lockport. And possibly I had the satisfaction of being a friend of Dan Mulvey, who was one of the greatest kickers that I will ever see or ever did see. And he, in fact, he only died here just a few years ago and was buried out of Middleport, New York. But Dan Mulvey was a friend of mine. He was a good operator and a good football player. Used mostly for kicking.
Mm-hmm. Good. Okay, you got anything else in your athletic or? You know, one thing that while we're on the subject of the Army, it was kind of nice to see that. The people here in the village picked it up and didn't let it just set idle and made a YMCA out of it so the kids
well,
can still play
Company
basketball
F,
and that and there.
Company
you know.
F had a softball team in the Army,
mm-hmm.
and we represented. We won the championship. There were several teams, and when I say several, I think there was either four or five, but we
right.
won the championship there.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a lot different playing inside than it is outside.
Oh, yeah, right.
In other words, you couldn't get the volume there. If you got a hit, you didn't know exactly what was going to happen. It could hit something and bound back in or something to that effect, see. But it only lasted 1 year. Then the lacrosse was taken over by the Indians.
Mm-hmm. I remember that.
And, of course, none of us naturally played lacrosse, but we attended the games, that's all.
Mm-hmm. Right. Okay, well, now you pretty well covered this.
I think we covered.
Very good. Okay, the one thing I'd like to get into here, and, of course, this is one of the major highlights of your life, is your career with the New York State Conservation Department. Now, you told me here you started April 1st, 1930, and you retired December 9th, 1967. Now, that's almost 38 years. Now, you've got a few precious memories with the department.
I have some of the best.
Okay.
A friend of mine, a good friend of mine, Merrill Callahan, was a game protector here for years and years. He decided to go to Syracuse as an inspector. which left this job vacant. He even approached me and said, "Lank, why don't you try for the job?" Well, at once I got on the ball and started to work on it. I will say possibly within a month, I had contacted some of my friends, and
said,
especially Dave White and Medina. "We'll see what we can do for you," which he did. One day I got a call and says, "You got to go to Lockport, take an examination for a game protector," which I did. There were several of us there from Orleans County, and I tried the examination at the post office in Lockport, 1930. Later, I received a call from Albany, from Henry Morgenthau, who was the inspector there at Albany, the conservation department. And he said, "I want to see you right away," which I, no doubt I I was all excited, and I left that same night. I met Mr. Morgenthau. He shook hands with me and he said, "Well, you're big enough to take care of the job." That was about all he said. He says, "I want you to go back to Orleans County and do a good job." And he handed me a gun, badge, and so forth, says, "You're in."
Now, you drove to Albany by yourself?
I drove to Albany by myself.
Mm-hmm.
It surprised me because, as a result, we didn't have too much conversation, see?
Mm-hmm.
Well, we got back to Medina, and I started the very next day. I had to go in to see Willard Tillman, who was my boss.
In Buffalo?
And one of the very best.
Right.
And he says, "Now, I'll tell you what you're going to do." He says, "You have all of Orleans County. Go down," and he always used to call me Obie. He says, the word Lank never appealed to him, so he called me Obie.
Mm-hmm.
So I went down, and I stayed in Orleans County for several years. I met a lot of good folks, but one thing I prided myself on, and I'll never forget, I call him Bill Tillman. I said, "Bill, if you ever get a detail, let me in on it." I said, "I'd like to meet some of the boys around the state." This he did.
Mm-hmm.
And during this time, he sent me on details and to some of the following territories, and I'll never forget. I see New York State, especially the first 2 years, I see a lot of New York State and met a lot of good game protectors, a lot of them. I went to Long Island, Albany, Delmar, Lake Champlain, St. Lawrence River, Sodus, Rushford, Chautauqua, Niagara River, Lake Erie, and Lake Ontario. During that time, I met the game protectors and one or two of the bosses, Red Cohn out of Olean, who was turned out to be one of my best friends. They even sent men out with me, some of their trusted men, and I received a lot of good information. That's where I really, really got all the information I needed to try to become a successful game protector. Things progressed, as I say, pretty, pretty good. When in 1942, the job of assistant district game protector was introduced. I tried that job, tried for the job, and was I lucky? I passed it at a percentage of 95 4/10. But naturally, I had all that experience, and I got to give credit to men like Woodcock and Zwetch, Nichols, and guys like that who really went to town with me and they helped me at every possible turn.
They're also game protectors.
They were all game protectors.
Different counties, yeah. Right? I recognize the names.
Yeah. Then as I went along from 42, there was a lot of new men appointed, and I had the satisfaction of breaking in all the men, the entire 13. I had 13 men under my supervision, and not one of them were bad. Not one of them. They all turned out okay, and possibly later years, why they might have the same job as I got. At the same time now, instead of being an assistant, it's a lieutenant.
Mm-hmm.
But it's all practically the same. It's just a...
And also, as you were saying before we started here, you're not a game protector today, you're a conservation officer.
You're a conservation officer.
Right, but it's the same job that you had.
Used to be the old-time game protector, see, and then they used to call them game wardens.
Right.
But now it's conservation officers, and of course they've got a different list of jobs and duties that they have to perform.
Right.
Such as checking, you know, checking streams and so forth for pollution, and not only work as a law enforcement man. That law enforcement has sort of fallen off. See, now everything is taken for granted that you've got to, in order to be a good man, you got to go out and do a good job. See, I feel deep down in my heart, Don, that I did a good job. I tried to be as fair as I possibly could. No doubt I lost a few friends. No doubt I made a few enemies. But at the same time, the kind of people that I made friends of was the kind of people that stuck with me all during my lifetime. And I appreciate a good friend when I have one.
I know you got friends because you were probably the first person in Medina picked as a Citizen of the Year when the Journal first started this. I know you were the first good Citizen of the Year to be picked, so I know you. I know you've got an awful lot of friends here.
Well, I appreciated that. It isn't that I deserved it or so forth. It was just the idea that I'm proud of the fact that the people of Medina took time out to vote for me and to prove that isn't asking too much.
No. You've done a good job, through
the
years.
I've tried to.
Oh.
And if I went back over the years now, Don, I'd do the same kind of a job.
Certainly.
I'd make a few and I'd break a few. That's always to it. That can absolutely not be helped.
Everybody realizes this is your job, you know. If you don't have a game protector, you wouldn't have any game to hunt or fish, so.
We have to do that. And, of course, as I say, sometimes those days, you know, money was kind of hard to get, and a heavy penalty would be about $12 and a half, where now that's only a drop in the bucket. You wouldn't... Now there's nothing to be fined anywhere from $300 to $500, see? I know that in 1943, I was during the World War, I picked up some German boys down in Murray, and we accepted a $1,210 fine and come out in the Associated Press, and my gosh, that's a lot of money.
Well, they were jacking deer.
Deer jackers, yeah. They had three deer.
Of course, I was overseas then, but I remember hearing about it.
And that was a lot of money. And even Associated wanted to know if I had a picture. They wanted to put my picture in the paper, and I disallowed that. I said, oh, no, I just picked them up, and that's all there was to it, see. But the funny part I'll never forget, Kleindienst, who was sheriff of the county at that time, says to me, this don't smell right. He says, here they send up $3,000 or $4,000 on a Sunday afternoon. When I go to Rochester and I get over on Joseph Avenue, where I was born and brought up, I'll find out about this. About 3 or 4 days after that, he called me up and he says, Lank, I want to see you. I went down to see him and he says, you know, you didn't hurt that Pappenfuss one bit. And I said, why? He says, you know the money that you got out of that, out of those four boys? And I says, no. You took it away from the German-American Bund. Well, I said, that's funny.
I says,
they weren't represented.
He says, no,
but they had dinners every Friday night and Saturday, and they had venison, and they set aside a little money in case any of the boys got in trouble. They would go ahead and compensate whatever money was
spent.
And he says, you took some of the German-American bond, but at the same time, you did a good job. But he says, it's a closed issue. Maybe we can
pick him up again.
So we closed the matter right there and never heard no more about it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, another thing, when you first started, you were talking about Joe Minkey and Everett Hart. They were really working hard in those early 30s to get some kind of a refuge established in the Alabama Swamps or the Tonawanda Swamps.
That's right.
Whichever you want to call it, they call it both. But anyway, we're talking about the swamps that run the straddle Genesee Orleans County. I know you knew Everett Hart, Minkey, real well.
Another one of my great friends up there who was working with the same, although he had land, was Martin Schmidt,
who had a
large piece of land and water over on the east side. Now, Martin Schmidt was from Buffalo. He was a fur dealer, and he was probably one of the best. Are you speaking about fur dealers? We got Roy Hill, Billy Gill, probably two of the very best, and two of my good friends. They made money, they lost money, but at the same time, I don't think that they lost too much buying fur.
But
Steve Chapman, who I know Steve for a good many years, and he still is one of my best friends. And Steve is a great conservationist. He's working for that job up there in Alabama in Oakville. And I'd like to say this about another good friend of mine. Possibly a lot of people know him, but one of the boys that used to come and visit me, Bob Perry.
Right. Would he be your boss over Tillman, or was he just a branch?
No, he was a branch. In other words,
they're the Fish and Wildlife Park, and you're the game protector.
He was like the Bureau of Game. In other words, he took care of Bill Tillman. His name is Willard Tillman, but I always call him Bill. Was a he's law enforcement.
Mm-hmm. One of the finest
law enforcement that I ever met,
because
he was fair.
He knew the
ropes. Absolutely knew all. There wasn't anything that boy didn't know, and we had some real good ones. Another fellow that was in my corner, he was out of Albany, was Bill Goodman and Paul Benoit,
who was.
They were both chiefs down there,
and.
And you can depend, if you did a good job,
they would always
send you a letter
of commendation.
And I appreciate it,
and I
still hear from the two of them at the present
time.
I understand
now
that Bob Perry has been under the weather all year. I sent him a card, but I have never received any answer. That Bob is a good friend of mine.
He was good, and I wrote a feature on the swamp, and he was really great. And of course, you were too at the time, and helped me all that out. I met Goodman and Benoit several times at council. And, you know, you talked about Willard Tillman. I never knew him, but I knew he's later. You're nice to work with, and they always spoke. When they find out you're from Orange County, they'd
always
say hello to Obie.
He always turned around.
Sure
Harry Twist.
Yeah.
Harry was a little fella, but he had a set of gold teeth, and
every time
he smiled, I
had to close my eyes because
he almost put my eyes out.
Harry
was one of the best.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
He's a great guy.
Well, we're just earlier here getting ready for this. We were looking at some dates there in 1938 where Everett Hart and Joe Mankey and all these are trying to get the swamp, and they got Montezuma at that time. They said they started to turn us down, but
we
finally made out, Link. We got some nice land over there.
We got the best. You got a better tract of land than Montezuma. Montezuma's, you got too much water there for all right for waterfall, but over here we have game, you know. We have everything. Deer,
we have.
And the beaver's coming back over there too.
Right.
We got a nice show of beaver, but the farmers are kind of up against it. They don't like to have beaver in there on account of spoiling the land, you know, and flooding it.
Right.
But this year they had a season on pheasants over there,
and it's
pretty nice to go ahead and liberate pheasants and find out just how many's going to hunt the tracks.
Right.
The other way,
you know, I will have 50 in one acre, and the next acre you won't have any. See, so
right.
It's all levels off to good hunting. That's all.
When you were right about the time that the deer and the fox started coming back here. Now
that's right.
In the late 1800s, somewhere, we lost all the deer and the turkey and the fox, and
well,
then they started migrating back from the Pennsylvania border when that southern tier land was being left by farmers. And
about the first
deer that we
would see up in
your. Figuring your when you saw your first deer,
I'm not sure of the date, but I would say probably about 1936 or 8 in there somewhere.
Mm-hmm. Early mid-30s.
Mid-30s.
Right. Everybody says the same thing.
I would say they come back about that time, see, and I'll never forget there was a female with two young. That was the first two I see, and it was a great. It came out in the paper, and we had quite a talk about that, quite a conversation. And naturally, it happened the Alabama swap, and just into Genesee County.
Right. Today, they think nothing of.
They think nothing of it.
Seeing 200-300 deer in the spring when it floods over in there.
I went up, possibly 4 or 5 years ago, east of Alabama on the Lockport Oakville Road.
Lockport Lewiston.
Lewiston Road.
Right.
And we counted over 500 deer.
Yeah.
It was wonderful to see that many, you know, at one time. It just couldn't be. But when you see deer come up into a farmer's beanery and eat beans and corn and everything right out of their silos, and you say to yourself, well, those poor farmers, I wonder if they're going to be compensated. But I don't hardly think that. they did too much damage. They took a few little nibbles, and then away they went again.
Well, that's what, you know, a lot of people can't understand why you hunt them, but if you didn't hunt them, you'd have so damn many that
you've got to hunt
you couldn't,
them.
Right.
You've got to keep the
keep
population
thin down,
down,
right, because this is what you'd
same,
have.
Same way with rabbits, the same way with fox. If somebody doesn't hunt fox, well, then it's going to be overrun with vermin, see?
Muskrats, right.
And everything else, see? Yeah. Pheasants, of course, pheasants are... I don't hardly think that the pheasants were killed off by some of the material that the farmers are using, probably.
That, and they're taking away a lot of their hiding, fence
rows.
Right,
that's right, the fence, we call a fence box.
Right.
They're all gone, yeah. And then on top of that, why, you've got that certain, you've got a violator, and he does more damage, because he'll shoot during the time that they're nesting, see? So if they'd only wait, and if they're going to shoot a pheasant out of season, is during the late fall or winter, but they don't do that. They just go ahead and they shoot them right off the nest, see? It isn't right. It isn't fair. It isn't fair to the good sportsman who tries to live up to the law, see? They
right.
Just don't do it.
Right.
But our muskrat population, that's coming back pretty good. But when I was a boy, many and many a muskrat I caught and stretched out, homemade stretchers, sold to Roy Hill for 60 cents. Now a good muskrat, a good prime muskrat is worth $10.
Close.
I just can't believe it. I just and a fox last year sold for over 100, well, they're down slightly this year, but last year they got to $100. And when I look back over the years and think about over there in Wyoming County, why those guys, they got fox, trapped fox, and they were offered $1 apiece for them. Eventually they sold, see.
When was this now,
I would say probably...
The 30s?
Middle 30s.
Mm-hmm.
And Leon Nichols, who had over 500 fox at one time, he was a great... Of course, he made his own lure, but he had a pile of fox, and he got $1 apiece for him.
Wasn't he a CO, a conservation officer from Wyoming County?
One that I broke in, a man that stayed here, and one of the nicest men that I ever had the satisfaction of meeting.
Mm-hmm.
And the other one was a great conservationist by the name of Zwetch, Glenn Zwetch.
Right.
And let me tell you, there was two game protectors, or conservation officers, or so on. They were the greatest. If you put them out on a violation, they would stay on that violation until something was
decided.
It was decided. That's right.
Mm-hmm.